Welcome to another edition of Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio, part of the Pitt Bulletin Legal News Network. Broadcasting each Tuesday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the show covers the latest Pitt Bull news across the country, including breed-specific legislation, the real story behind recently reported dog attacks, fact-checking on dogsbite.org, litigation updates, and a live call-in discussion. Call 646-595-4137 or join us in chat during the show.
Welcome to Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio, January 6, 2015. I'm your host, Fred Craig, with my co-host, Chris Brown, Sugar Diaz from Stop ESL, along with the rest of the PBLN crew, and we'll be talking about what was the best and worst of 2014, and we'll also be talking later in the show, hopefully if Rebecca Corey can get the time straightened out from L.A., about Rebecca Corey and what she has planned for 2015. So welcome back, everybody. After 2 weeks, we're ready to put on a really big show, as Ed Sullivan would say, if you even know who he is. And Denise, are you over there in the chat room?
I sure am. I'm ready to chat away.
All right. So if you want to chat with Denise, you go to the Blog Talk Radio Live Listen URL, and you go to the box that says chat. You click on it, sign in with your Facebook credentials, and you'll be ready to go. Now, Denise, rumor has it that you did some traveling over the holidays.
I did. We went to North Carolina, which was a nice change from the heat of Miami.
And did you see any bears looking in your windows?
No, I didn't see any bears, but I did get to
Were
meet
you bear?
Little...
Were you bear while you were in North Carolina, speaking of bears?
Was I bear? Not appropriate, Fred.
Well,
keep that. That's another show. That's the late night show.
Okay.
But I did get to meet Deirdre Franklin, and I got to go to her store, and I stocked up on a whole bunch of Pit Bulls, Pin Up for Pit Bulls gear. So it was really exciting. Her store is awesome. If you guys are ever in Asheville, check it out. Stock up. Great stuff. Good
I saw your picture with her.
Yeah, it was really fun, and she's even more of a sweetheart in person, if that's even possible.
I don't think that's possible.
I didn't think so either, but...
But there you have it.
Yep.
And how was the... Did you like the wilderness, or are you going to continue on with being a city girl? Are you ready to move?
No, I'm not a city girl at all. I'm a outdoor girl. I need to get away from here. I'm done. I'm over it. As if Miami didn't have enough downfalls with their pit bull ban. That's another one of them.
So you want to move to Asheville?
I would love to move to Asheville. That's great.
Asheville's a very arty sort of town. Did you like it?
It was I felt like I was home. When we got there and we were walking around, I felt like my soul, my spirit was at home.
Okay, so that's your next goal is to move to Asheville.
Yes, it is. I gotta win the lotto and get over there.
Well, that sounds like a very likely way to achieve your goal to me.
Yeah, there you go.
So, well, I'm glad you had a good time and you made it back alive, because you never know what's going to happen in the wilderness. It's a Darwinistic sort of place, and you know, if you fall in the wrong place or meet up with the wrong kind of animal, you could not make it.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, luckily, it's, you know, it's the winter, so I think the way it works is most animals were hibernating.
Right.
Or at least that's what I told myself while I was doing hiking, so, but no, we made it back in one piece.
All right, did you feel cold? Because I know when you're in Miami, it's 50, you think it's cold down there.
It was like 40 degrees, and we had the fireplace going. And
yes,
I had
it was 40 degrees.
My
oh, 40 wow. degrees. Oh, my God. We're going to have to get on our long underwear.
It was great.
You Florida people.
All right. Well, let's do a little bit of a – I don't know if Chris is going to be able to remember. Geez, it's 3 weeks ago.
Previously on Pitt Bulletin Legal News Radio.
Chris, your thoughts on who we had on last?
Oh, my God, I don't think I'll be able to remember.
Oh, wow, I do remember, so we're okay, but that's it. Time's up.
There's a first
what's your
time
answer?
For everything.
What's your answer?
Wow. I'm so sorry.
Joanna Faulber.
Oh, my God.
Faulber.
You know
how could you forget her?
She is going to yell at me, too, because we're friends.
She should,
friends,
because she was very memorable.
The holidays took it out of me.
Say again. Time's up. All right. So, yes. Yeah, so she came on and discussed, really, I would say community outreach. But I know you might not remember because you have drunk so much between then and now that all of the memories of that show may be completely gone.
I do remember now. And one of the things that stood out the most to me and which I love and which more people would implement is the idea of running advocacy like business.
Yeah.
Having, exactly. You know, having that same sort of like structure, organization,
yeah.
people
yeah.
delegated to what they're good at.
Yeah.
And, you know, being responsible for certain projects and not micromanaging necessarily, but, you know, having people who can play to their strengths. I think that's a fabulous idea, and more people should implement it in their organizations. I think, you know, they would probably see some increased success, you know, the way her group has seen success.
Yeah, we should implement that.
We
need to get some businessmen in here, you know?
That sort of has, like, more to do, I think, with the fact that pretty, like, everybody's a lawyer but me.
Yeah, but you could be a lawyer if you wanted to be.
I'm an honorary lawyer.
You are an honorary lawyer. So so anyway, I thought that was interesting, and I think her group does good work, and I think that there are a lot of people that could benefit from having more of a business-type sort of structure in their advocacy. The problem is that I see is that advocacy can be a very personal sort of thing. I mean, it can be, and it can be hard to find qualified people that you can rely on to do their job without being managed. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I think, and it's particularly, it wouldn't be hard if you were a business because you pay people and you say, look, you do this or you're fired. When you have, you know, volunteers, it's, you know, it's a very different situation. You have to try and get people have to enjoy what they're doing, or why would they do it?
Absolutely. Absolutely agreed. And, you know, sometimes it can be hard, like you said, with volunteers, getting people to self-motivate.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, if you operate your organization, like, and I'm going to qualify this with the way a good business is run.
Yes.
There's a lot of motivation that comes from the position, you know, the leadership position, you know, energizing people. And that's sort of one of the things I love about Joe is she's energized.
She
you know,
is.
She's like so in there and giving other people energy through her passion and energy.
I agree. That's part of what you need in your organization is energy from the top down. And that's clearly important. So are we going to do a news wrap up of 2014 in your segment on BSL?
I am all ready to go on a BSL year in review.
Okay.
If you want to.
Well, let's do a little news first because there's been a lot of news and actually some crazy news since our last show. So let me just talk about a few stories and you can tell me if you've heard about it. I guess one of the biggest brouhahas that came out over the holidays was Dr. Laura, who is a talk show, psychologically self-help kind of person, coming out and basically saying that pit bulls in shelters should all be put down. And that ignited a firestorm of activity.
Yeah, she had said that they were a waste of space, I believe, was the
yes,
phrase
that's
that she
part
used.
Of what she said. Yeah.
And, you know, it's sort of interesting because this was in a segment of on combating loneliness, of
right,
all things.
To get a dog.
Yeah.
And then,
she was talking about going, like, I think she was talking about volunteering at a shelter, maybe.
to utilize your time towards something positive. And she talked about going to a shelter and seeing a lot of, you know, pit bull types.
Right.
And she did issue an apology-ish. It was kind of one of those backhanded, I'm sorry if I offended you apologies.
But I still believe it.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, it's better than nothing. I will give credit when there is, you know, a little movement and a little leeway. So it is absolutely better than either a defensive response or just completely ignoring the issue. So she did, you know, she did make a response and apologize for it. And interestingly, you know, she doesn't have it's Sirius XM satellite, which
right.
she transitioned to after a particularly nasty incident where she used some racial slurs, saying that she could be more free to say whatever she wanted. So,
right.
you know, it's sort of a it's a different platform. So there's not as much, there's not really so many places where you can put pressure on like sponsors or whatever to force somebody's hand. So I sort of thought that was interesting that she apologized in spite of that.
Anyway, okay, the next story is Gracie, one of the Vic dogs, died this last week. And she was a well-loved dog, bow-legged. And so that was a sad story to hear. But it brings up the note that happened a long time ago. I mean, it's almost been how many years now since that whole Vic thing broke?
Oh, I don't even remember exactly, but it's been quite some time now.
Yeah, I mean, so the dogs are getting old, and this is, I think we're going to see, you know, many of them pass on. But what we have to take away from that, in my opinion, is they were able to go out and live the rest of their lives and changed even Florida law to with respect to fighting dogs and whether they should be automatically put down. So,
yes, and they've lived their lives without incident.
Yes.
Despite what people say about, you know, oh, well, former fighting dogs are out wandering our streets and attacking our children.
Terrorizing
and, you know,
the
all that. Yeah, all that rhetoric. They live their lives quietly with their handlers without incident. And, you know, if it weren't for the fact that they were owned by Michael Vick at one time, nobody would know.
And on that note, Barbara Kay up in the in Canada, of course, got, you know, wrote an article about how pit bulls, this is the first time in history that people have fought to have a dog that's dangerous not be banned. Did you read that article? It was very, you know, it was a typical Barbara Kay.
No, I don't. I actually stopped reading her stuff quite some time ago. I refuse to give her the clicks at this point. I know what she's going to say. She's been repeating herself. I don't even know how long at this point. I could probably write the article for her at this point in time. So I just bypass the aggravation.
All right. We also had the NCRC publish their final 2013 report on dog-related fatalities. Did you get a copy of that from the list?
That I didn't get a chance to look at the whole thing at this point, but it seems to be pretty much in line with what we've seen in previous years.
Yes, yes.
A lot of the same factors from the JVMA study.
Of course, we also have Selena Kansas going on. We sent out a Freedom of Information Act, and I got a letter back from one of the city functionaries saying that they would get back to me on January 9th. With how much it would cost to get all these documents that they don't really have anyway. But I'll be interested to see, and we'll share with you all what that response is. What's going on, do you know, with the cases that are going on there?
Both of the cases are actually going to be heard tomorrow.
Okay. Well,
the one owner is trying to get another continuance. Hopefully this will be granted. There needs to be a little bit more time to get some, you know, financials due to some unforeseen circumstances that had arisen. So, you know, hopefully, given the circumstances, she'll be able to have just a little bit more time. But, you know, there is an attorney advising and everything's in place there. And then the other case is
actually being heard tomorrow for sure.
Are they having the trial tomorrow?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay.
No, I believe they had the pretrial conference already for that case.
Which case
so
is the one with the Catahoula?
That is the one that is actually being heard tomorrow, is the son of the owner.
And the theory that I've heard, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that the veterinarian, Dr. Atherton, is going to testify that a Catahoula is a pit bull because it has one characteristic in common with a pit bull.
Well, he is going to testify not that the Catahoula is a pit bull, but that specific dog was fathered by a pit bull. Because we know the mother is a paper dog because mm-hmm. of the bite style, which,
so
interestingly enough,
expert.
Well, this
now
is actually
expert?
Hilarious. The bite style, the tooth style that he says that only pit bulls have, which he calls, it's referred to as a scissor bite, is also included in the breed standard for Catahoula leopard dogs as the mm-hmm. preferred tooth, bite style.
And I'm sure that we could go through there and find many other breeds that have that scissors bite.
Oh yeah, tons.
So
tons.
Why would
it
how what if? So the cross examination to me would be pretty simple. You'd say, okay, you're saying that. I would go through the dog breed standards and pick every dog that has that one thing, and say, does that make this dog a pit bull? And look how different he looks.
You would say yes.
And then I would
from
say, well, your opinion is, yeah. I call bullshit, Judge. That's what I would say.
That'll work out well.
Yeah, and I'd be in jail in 5 seconds. Okay. All right, well, I do want to talk to that lawyer after tomorrow and see what happened, because I think they get a de novo hearing, and I'd like to sharpen his pencil for that. Okay, there were a couple fatalities, I think, over the holidays. One... maybe they weren't fatalities. Maybe there was one where a dog attacked someone, and I'm looking at my notes here, and of course I didn't put the place where it happened, but the dog looked like it had been deemed dangerous before, and it looked like it had been a chain dog. I think it was in Oklahoma. Did you read about that?
Let me refer to my notes. I had heard of a couple of fatalities. One actually which
Oklahoma.
Ended up not being a fatality, which is not the one you're talking about.
The
one you're talking about, the dog had been, reported on previously and had bitten the owner previously.
Okay, the one you're talking about now is in Portage, Indiana, where it was a pit bull that killed somebody on Christmas. And the dog had a history of aggression, and they had to tase it. And he had previously bitten the wife and girlfriend of the guy who owned the dog. So people say, dogs snap. That the only reason I'm bringing this up is that in both cases, these dogs had a history of aggression. And, if you have a dog that has a history of aggression, you either have to, train it so that you can be sure that, you have control of it, euthanize it, or be hyper-vigilant about where and what it does. Do you agree?
Absolutely. If you have a dog that shows aggressive inclinations, particularly to humans, and even we know that, a dog fight can be dangerous as well because if people try to break it up improperly, they get injured. Any aggressive inclinations at all, people have to manage the dogs. And people in the community have to report these dogs as well. It's not enough to just, whisper behind each other's backs and saying, oh, that dog's dangerous. You have to do something about it.
Which segues into the next story, which I just posted on our Facebook page. There's a suit in Los Angeles against animal control where several pit bulls mauled a person, and they're alleging that these dogs were complained about and animal control didn't do anything, and that they actually, animal control went in after the incident and changed records, so it looked like they didn't have any notice of it. This is not the first suit that's happened. I think there was one in Pierce County, Washington. don't hold me to that, but there was one where they appealed it as far as they could, and they basically held animal control responsible because they're the DPOC. In this case, the animal control alleges that these dogs were kept by a drug to guard a drug operation, that when they went out to see what was going on, that the guy hid the dogs. And so it'll be an interesting case to follow to see. And the question to me is, you know, whether or not reasonable animal control officers would have been able to follow up on this. That's going to be what the issue of law will be, because, you know, if you have a drug guy and he's hiding them and you can't find them because he's doing all this stuff, it's not reasonable. You know, animal control can't be everywhere all the time. But if they, and also if they falsified records, that's the end of the case, if they can prove that.
Yeah.
So then there was, I got a thing where I saw dogsbite.org is soliciting donations so he can keep up with their counting their pit bull attacks because no one else is doing it.
Because it's so hard to sit on the computer and Google.
Yeah. And then there
I'm
was
sorry,
the case
that
you
was
were,
that snarky?
Well, you know, my thing is, hey, you know, they, you know, they just, they're soliciting donations just like, you know, I don't know how, they don't get that many donations anyway, so they must be in dire straits if they're having to solicit. You'd think that they'd have, you know, with all of the talk and all of the, you know, all of the stuff they're doing, you would think that they'd have their own little lobby by how much they need that, and, you know, by how much they stir things up.
Yeah, it does seem that way, but we do know that this is mostly a very small handful of very vocal people who have way too much time on their hands on social media, making pages and accounts.
Yeah. And also taking over a comment section of everything that has to do with it. What we know is that the first time they reported, they reported $20,000 in donations. If you look at a place like Bad Rap, they have like $300,000 in donations. So by donations, looking at that, you can see that they're a fringe group, and they are, there's a false equivalency. They make a lot of noise, but there are only a few of them. So going on to the case that you were talking about, which I'm sure that they have categorized as a pit bull death, there was a case in Michigan, Vilas County, Oshkosh, where it was initially reported that pit bulls killed a guy, and then when they did some investigation, they found out that the person died of natural causes, and the dog apparently tried to grab the person and drag him around. So it was not a fatality caused
by
the
dog. I don't know that this actually had any official breed identification from the media.
Yeah.
If they did, it wasn't from the local media. Although there is absolutely a comment in the comment stream saying that pit bull feral packs are a problem across the country. So, you know, obviously this, it was a woman, very unfortunately died of natural causes out there. And, you know, apparently the wounds were sort of superficial, but her clothing was torn off. And, you know, they are speculating that perhaps the dog tried to drag her or wake her up or something. And that's how this, you know, the situation occurred. But they're doing a tox screen. I believe they have a tox screen left to do, but it's been ruled a natural death.
Yeah. the other story that really topped this year's list is that Pitbull fell on his ass on New Year's Eve. Did you hear that?
Oddly enough, that one squeaked through my Google alerts.
Of course it did. We hear everything about Pitbull when we're you know, doing our in front of our computers. But I figured that, you know, that would have to be one of the top stories of 2015 because, you know, it was all over the internet, and it had the word Pitbull attached to it. So, all right, the last story I'm going to talk about is the story where the Pitbull was shot to death in Islip, New York, in the owner's backyard. Apparently somebody shot it with a pellet gun through the heart, and it's a terrible commentary that a dog can be in his own backyard for 15 minutes, and you go back and your dog's been shot. And it doesn't look like the dog was, you know, there are some dogs that, you know, that are a problem. They bark all night or whatever. It doesn't look like any of that was the motivation in this case.
I'm not familiar with that particular story, so I'm just
I think it came out today. But let's talk more about Pitbull falling on his ass during New Year's Eve. What did you think about that story? Did you think it was caused by a slippery floor, or he'd had too much to drink, or what?
I think it was because his name is Pitbull, and, you know, it's just there's just an inherent violence there. So even bearing the name means that you're going to get hurt somehow. And in this case, he slipped.
Okay, well, you know, I'm surprised that I wish we could have watched the video of it, but I didn't care enough to even click on that. But it is an interesting story that we've been following, you know, with as much possible scrutiny as possible. Before we break for station identification and bring on Rebecca Corey, let's talk about a little bit of your, before we give you your, you know, your whole year in review. Did I see that the Utah ban on Pitbull bans has gone into effect January 1st?
Yep, January 1st. The law that was voted into Utah in March, I believe it was, March of 2014, became effective, nullifying any existing breed discriminatory ordinances and prohibiting any breed discriminatory ordinances from being passed in the future.
So does that mean if somebody presently has a ban that it's not grandfathered in, that they have to get rid of it?
Yeah, at this point in time, it appears that there's absolutely no grandfather clause and no home rule.
Well, that's good. I like that. I also read that Sherry Appleton, one of my favorite people in Washington, has submitted a bill to prohibit pit bull bans. Have you heard that?
Yes, we have a bill pre-filed in Washington. So, you know, for people who maybe aren't familiar, when a bill is pre-filed, it's basically just filed before the official beginning of the legislative session. So, you know, in Washington, people who live in Washington state should be contacting their senators, you know, letting them know that they support this bill. This is the second year in a row they tried to get a similar bill passed last year that had a little, you know, I believe it got to the committee phase and didn't get much further than that. It was held for study, if I'm not mistaken.
They should call the guys in Moses Lake, Washington, where we sued, and ask them how that worked out for them.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah. And how much they had to pay in order to defend a law that was ultimately repealed.
So, yes.
So, you know, I mean, there is evidence there. I mean, maybe I should send her a little resume of a little of that case. You know, like particularly the deposition of the guy who was doing the identifications.
That's a good idea.
To explain to the legislators how legally difficult it is to come into court and give an opinion that meets the tests of admissibility. I would love to cross-examine this guy in Kansas with this, what he's saying. You know, I've actually talked to him on the phone, and he would not give me his fax number. That's what the kind of guy he is. So, yes, we're going to have a tangle. We're going to tangle with him, I think, a little bit on the records request that we send to him. But, okay, let's take a little station identification and come back with Rebecca Corey, and we will have your segment. Don't worry, Chris. I don't want you to worry.
I'm not worried.
Okay.
You're listening to Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio. Follow us by clicking the follow link in the upper left-hand corner at www.blogtalkradio.com/pit-bulletin-legal-news. Or better yet, join our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/pitbulletinlegalnews to hear the latest news and updates during the week. Join the discussion during the show by logging into chat as a guest through Facebook or call us at 646-595-4137. Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio is brought to you by the Pit Bulletin Legal News Network, the first and only network of pit bull-related information for owners, advocates, lawmakers, and the media. Visit our network of experts at www.pblnn.com for all things pit bull. Find news, upcoming and archived shows, statistics and studies, as well as ownership and advocacy information, all in one location. That's www.pblnn.com, the Pitt Bulletin Legal News Network.
Well, we're back, and obviously we're going to have to get on our site the video of a pit bull falling down on New Year's Eve, don't you think, since we're all things pit bull.
It's very topical. Very topical.
All right, our next guest is Rebecca Corey, and she's been on the show before. She's the winner of last year's Wallace Award for her work putting on the first Pit Bull March on Washington. She's a comedian. She's very funny. I actually saw her act at the Improv when I went out to give her the award. Let's welcome Rebecca Corey to the show. Rebecca Corey.
I love the music.
Yeah. I think it gives you that sort of idea that this is a big show and there's big things going on.
Yeah, you're not kidding around. You're really bringing it.
So it was great coming out to see you, and we must keep between ourselves the wild time that we had after everybody went home and we partied all night.
Oh yeah, actually, I think I got home at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
and I think the very last human being I saw.
I was so ruined the next day.
Wasn't it super fun? Isn't the event amazing?
Yes, it was. David Spade was there, and he was funny. And the women comedians were pretty funny. And I have to say that actually you were the least raunchy of the women comedians there.
Well, there's only two women comedians there, so
yeah.
I don't know what. It was only me and Whitney Cummings.
Right,
and,
so you were less raunchy than her.
Yeah, you know, what do you think I am, filthy Fred?
No,
I'm filthy all the time.
No, but I'll tell you what, Whitney does have as all good comedians do. There was a lot of truth in what she had to say, and. For those of you who weren't there, and that would be a large number of people, I think, because it was sold out and there were 150 people there, or 100, I don't know. But when she was talking about, you know, when you're young and 25, it's easy for you to date and do all these things. But when you get into your 30s and 40s, now, you know, things are harder. You know, you just don't show up and everybody loves your jokes. And when she was talking about, you know, she didn't properly develop a personality because, you know, everybody just thought when she was young and sexy that everything she was doing was so funny. And so I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Hey, listen, did you like her?
Yes, I did. I think all comedians need to have some commentary on today's society, and I think what she's saying is true. I think, and the funny thing is, you can't understand it until you're that age. And then she said to one of the people in the audience, "How old are you? 24?" She goes, "I'll give you 10 more years, then we'll talk."
Yeah, I like her a lot. I think that I think Whitney's doing some of her funniest stuff she's ever done, and her new special is really good. And she's working on another new hour for next year too. I know she's always doing new material, so I'm a fan. I think she's very fun. She's a pro, you know.
Absolutely.
The whole show was fantastic. I was, you know, I really, you know, Bill Burr is literally one of my favorite comedians of all time, and.
Yep.
And, of course, Kaley Cuoco is always showing up and always being awesome, and her sister sang. And I mean, you know what?
She could charge you probably, $100,000 for that just to show up based on what she makes.
Well, doing the
Big Bang Theory. I mean, she was there for I don't know how many hours. If you divided up how long it takes her to do the show, you're making money off her, man.
I mean, all of them could charge a nice fee if they wanted. But that's just awesome. It just shows how... It shows how, passionate they are about supporting Stand Up for Pitts and supporting the event and doing what they can when they can to help raise awareness about the breed. And I'm super grateful, you know, to them. I'm grateful to all of the comedians, all the acts around the country and all the different cities that show up for nothing and donate their time and their talents to the event and the cause. I mean, it's it's pretty incredible. And the Standard for Pits is growing so much. And, you know, it's a group effort. I always say that, you know, it's like, it's an idea and you know, I work very hard at it and, you know, all of that is true, but, you know, we are all in this together, and the more we work together, the more we can accomplish. So I'm really proud of Stand Up for Pits, and we're starting to add new cities this year. So we're going to be adding, we haven't done it yet, but we're going to be adding Indianapolis. Here's the cities who have agreed to add Stand Up for Pits: Indianapolis, Dallas, and Chicago. It's actually a suburb of Chicago. It's like on the south side, deep south side of Chicago. So those are the three new cities. And then we've already booked D.C. for next year, Seattle for next year, and L.A. for next year. And we're waiting to see if we're going to be doing Salt Lake, but we likely will too. But so that's seven cities now.
That's right. Salt Lake is a weird place.
I got to tell you. Oh, and we booked New York as well. We're doing New York on the anniversary of the Pibble March, which is May 3rd at Gotham in New York.
That's a great thing that you can do that on that same day.
Yeah, you should come up to Gotham. Is an amazing comedy club in New York City, and it's a.
Well, I have a friend that lives in New York City, so I actually could go up there and do that. When is it?
Tom, it's a great show. Last year it was Susie Essman did it, and Janine Garofalo and myself.
Yeah, let me ask you this. If you were a man, would you date Janine Garofalo?
Man, if I were a man?
Yeah.
Yeah, in a second.
Okay,
yeah.
Just checking.
Yeah, in one heartbeat, yes, I would.
So,
Now are you going to ask me if I was a woman, would I date Janine Garofalo?
Well, now that you've brought it up, I didn't say it.
No, I wouldn't. I love her so. But
when is the date of the New York thing?
May 3rd, 2015 in New York, and then D.C. is May 12th, or May 10th maybe, I don't know.
I come up there May 3rd because I have a friend up there, and he has a real nice little like studio apartment. It's right in Manhattan, and it's a great place to go.
It's an awesome, you know, New York City, you can't go wrong. And Stand Up for Pits last year was really, really awesome. So we're doing seven Stand Up for Pits this year, which is cool. And and everyone keeps still asking, is there gonna be a march this year? And the answer to that is
if you start one.
Anyone organizing that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not organizing a march in 2015, but I, as I've said many times, if someone else does,
go
to the West Lawn of the Capitol, and if I am able, yes, you bet I'll be there. But no, the Stand Up for Pits Foundation we're working on some other really cool things, and one of which I just posted on Instagram just now, which is we're launching our own online store through standupforpits.us, and we have nine new items, new merchandise items that are really cool that we're really proud of, and we're relaunching and reselling the Pibble March hoodies and t-shirts. Can you believe it?
I think that's a great idea. I think that as a person who, I mean, I don't know how many people know this, but I run a screen printing company also, because I'm a man and I'm a Renaissance man. I have many talents.
Yeah, you are.
And what I know from that business is that people like merchandise that memorializes something that they feel strongly about, or an event they attended, or event that they wish they could have attended and couldn't. So I think that is a great thing to sell. I think people will buy it because they want to be behind it even though they couldn't go.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I got to tell you, like, you know, the way that we, our merchandise, it's all going to be the vintage. That's our style, is it's vintage, it's distressed, and it's like super soft and thin stuff. So it's not like you're buying a Target shirt with the bold print. I mean, it's not going to last forever, but it is comfortable and it's adorable looking. And people like to wear it, and it has our message on it. So, you know, we've gotten tons of requests from people saying, you know, come on, why don't you have the shirts? Why don't you have it? And we we had to go through, we're going through a new company. It's this company is not a for-profit t-shirt company that sells merchandise in the name of Pitbulls. This is a company, it's a screen printing company. It's what
right.
they do.
Right.
And we get, Stand Up for Pits Foundation gets 100% of all the profits after cost. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, every year we're going to change the, we're going to have our staples, but our color is changing every year and our
right.
items will change every year. So we're never going to have the same kind of cool.
So that'd be like, it'd be like, hey, people can start collecting it. You know, like they collect Air
yeah.
Jordans.
That's right. So like in 2000, the color hasn't been released yet. I'm going to do it this week as to what our theme color is. If you go to the website, the website has our color for this year. Last
you
year.
See
the, was,
when you say the website, do you mean the Stand Up for Pits website? Just so
yeah. StandUpForPits.us. Yeah, it has our new color on it for 2015. But as I said, you know, every year it's going to change, and that's it. People can collect it. If they don't like it this year, then, you know, get something next year. We're not Macy's. We're a nonprofit, but we're going to have some cool things that we like that we feel inspired to with our message on it. It'll always have anti-BSL dogfighting message on it. So, we're pretty excited about that. And then the other thing that we've been working on, do you want to hear a big announcement?
I do want to hear. Wait a minute. Before you give a big announcement, I have to do some sound effects because otherwise, you know, it's not as exciting.
Oh, boy. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Oh my gosh! I don't know. I don't know if it diminishes the announcement. I don't know if it makes a mockery of it.
No, it people will go right to this part of the show and say, "Okay, now I know where we are. What's the announcement?"
All right, I don't know. Since the march, like shortly thereafter, you know, the Stand Up for Pits Foundation is new and young and. You know, it became. I've been doing Stand Up for Pits for over 4 years, but the foundation became a foundation. You know, over a year ago, we got our nonprofit status and stuff. But you know, where we actually became a nonprofit. But in that short time, you know, obviously the March on Washington was a huge accomplishment, something I'm very proud of.
Thank God you're proud of it.
I'm very, very proud of it. I'm very proud of it, Fred. I don't want
Thank you.
To have on the back, but I'm proud of it. I'm so proud of it. And I am. And I'm telling you, in my speech, I said on the lawn that it was the proudest moment. It was the
yeah.
proudest moment of my life. It will always be. I'm incredibly proud of it. And I'm really glad it happened. And I'm so happy to see over the last year how it inspired others to do events and marches and, you know, start petitions and start being louder and making their voices heard and not taking no for an answer. I love all of those things that it inspired. I think it's an amazing thing. And we were able to donate last year in that very short period of time. We donated over 14 grand to educational programs and frontline rescues and supported our local rescues and national rescues, Pitbull rescues, and help dogs with special needs and that needing medical attention and stuff like that. So we're really happy we're able to do that. And we started working on a project, and that project is we are going to be, the Stand Up for Pits Foundation is going to be launching an LA County and surrounding area anti-dogfighting tip line.
Cool.
And we are going to fund the entire operation and advertising of this tip line because, you know, breed specific legislation is obviously a huge part of our mission. We're against it. We believe in holding ignorance and discrimination. People who participate in that kind of behavior and hate speech and all of those things, we believe in holding those people accountable to the best that we can within the law. But we also really, really feel that one huge piece of education that's missing in communities and in our country is the dogfighting epidemic. And
yeah.
you know, I know we all talk about Michael Vick. You mentioned the dog that passed away, that precious
yeah.
little bull-legged. I loved her.
Yeah, Gracie.
But, yeah, adore. I mean, unbelievable. I love them all. But Michael Vick, you know, is not the only person who fights dogs. Actually, Michael Vick is just one of a giant subculture and you know, underground society that is doing this, and it's different tiered, it's different levels. White collar people, veterinarians. It's you know, just recently a school administrator, a woman in Palmdale, California, who oversaw the fourth largest school district. She just got arrested and convicted of animal cruelty and also child abuse. She was running a dog fighting ring, and it's all of these. What people aren't understanding is that, you know, it's the stereotype within a stereotype. It's like everyone is, oh, thugs that are carrying, you know, walking around with pistols on chains. It's just the low income. It's just the backwood Southern boys. You
know, right.
No, it's not. No, it's actually very well educated, influential, very smart people that know the difference, that know better. Nurses. There's been nurses that have been convicted of participating in running dog fighting rings because they have access to meds and all the things that they need in order to keep the dogs stitched up so they can fight again or be used as bait. And, you know, people also, we feel that we're going to really focus on educating people about what happens to these dogs after they've been seized. And, you know, it's a process. They're seized, and a lot of them have, you know, they're starved out, infected. A lot of them can't be rehabilitated. A lot of them that can be rehabilitated are not, there's not enough rescues who are willing to take them in. So unfortunately they're euthanized because they have the stigma of dog fighting and they haven't been properly assessed and treated. And, you know, these dogs sometimes need years to decompress and be able to be in a home environment, depending on what they've been through. And so, you know, and there's also the law. A lot of them are held as evidence in court cases, and you know that. And a lot of people on Facebook, and we've just been noticing that, like, you know, people go insane. Like, why are the first thing they say is, like, why are the dogs euthanized? Why are the dogs being given back? Why are the – well, because there's bureaucracy. There's red tape. Yep. There's legalities. You know,
there's lazy prosecutors, too. There's prosecutors, that don't file what they need to file. There's a case in Chicago where these dogs have been, I think it's been 3 or 4 years they've been held as evidence. And the prosecutor, the owner will not give them up. And the prosecutor will not go forward with the case, because I think probably because he doesn't think he has a strong case. But he doesn't also want, if you're the prosecutor, what do? You either have to file something that says we're taking the dogs away and prove your case, or you can do nothing. And that way the guy will never get the dogs back to fight them again, but in the meantime they're going to sit there in the shelter. So it's a very sticky problem, you know, that has no real good answer to it. If you give the dogs back, they're not in the shelter, but he fights them again.
Well, that's it. And then you know, there's also the other issue of, like, county and city shelters are so full. So let's say you seize 200 dogs from a dog fighting ring. You know, where are these dogs supposed to go? You know, I mean, I know that the national, you know, the HSUS has an amazing program that I believe it's called the DRC program, where they partner with rescues, nonprofits, 501s, that not just rescues, 501s, who are able qualified to handle dogs. You know, that although the dogs have been already treated, the dogs have been assessed, temperament tested, etc. And then HSUS, through their DRC program, places them in rescues so that they, you know, they go into fosters and they, you know, get adopted out. Well, the Humane Society has tons of those partners on the East Coast and tons of them in the Midwest. But, you know, in speaking with them about it, their program is really hurting for West Coast rescues, and to step up and say, you know what, we'll partner with you on this when you guys see dogs. Send them to us. It's a thing that we also want to encourage rescues to be a part of. And you know, it's understandable that you're taking a dog that's been through a traumatic situation, and you know, it might be easier to take the little white blue eyed puppy from the shelter that's going to raise you a lot of money, and you post that on your homepage or your Facebook or whatever, or your website. But these dogs, like you said earlier in your program, these dogs are important. They're important to education. They're important, they're ambassadors of the breed. Hector was an ambassador. Gracie,
yep.
That's her name, right? The little black
yep.
dog, she, the one that passed, she's an ambassador. These dogs are important to the cause. And
yes, they are, because they show that dogs even – because the theory is that all these dogs have this aggressive gene, which is completely ridiculous, because all the dogs that we know are companion animals, and they're so far removed from that
yeah.
gene pool that it doesn't make any difference. But even if you have a dog that has that – has been bred and taught to fight.
Yeah.
What these dogs show is that they can still go on and be productive members in the dog society.
That's right.
And that's a big deal. You know,
it's
I mean,
big
it shows.
Deal. It's a massive deal. And it's one way to reach the people that we need to reach. You know, the rehabilitation and the placing of these dogs, the power that they have, after what they've endured at the hands of humanity, you know, it's those kind of lives that impact our lawmakers, or can.
Right.
It's those kind of laws that impact people to understand that you know, these myths and you know, the perpetuation of these negative stereotypes that are not based in truth, they're all bullshit. You know, these dogs are very, very, very powerful ambassadors and a very powerful tool for us to be taking serious, to be taking care of them, you know. I definitely, one thing we are going to do, we're building a whole thing on our site about the education of dog fighting, you know, who's doing it, the tiers of it, how do you spot it, what do you do if you think it's happening, what is the process of it. It's a long process, you know. You can
yeah.
call a tip line, but that tip line then, you know, that tip needs to be sent to a private investigator. That investigator needs to then, you know, investigate that tip to see if it's, you know, to vet it out, to see if it's legitimate.
Right.
Then, you know, warrants have to be made. You know, there's a process. It's not just like,
I see it, I'm doing something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think the more educated people are on it, and the more these dogs we can save and place into loving homes, you know, that's the positive that came of the Michael Vick horror,
yeah.
was
yeah.
that those dogs were amazing ambassadors for this breed, and you know, really they raised awareness. And you know, Michael Vick was a high-profile person, and that's why the light was shed on it. But a lot of people, most people in this country, think that dog fighting ended when he got caught. It did not. It is, it's a massive epidemic. It's going on everywhere, in every tax bracket, in every community. It's going on in basements, trunks of cars, U-Hauls, you know, behind grocery stores, hiking trails, in upper-scale white communities. In
yeah.
you know, it's everywhere. And you know, the biggest message too, there's so many, but one of the big messages also that needs to be conveyed and that people need to take very serious is that, you know, the Stand Up for Pits Foundation, we've never really targeted the animal community. We've actually, as you know, Fred, haven't really had much support from the animal community.
Yes, I agree.
We don't do that, and I personally don't care what the animal community thinks. I want the people that do support the foundation and the people that are in the animal community that are like-minded, those are amazing human beings. And I've said it before, like, we have some of our supporters are some of the most unbelievable people. You're one of them, Fred. Like, it's like, because you guys understand that it's everyone's problem. We're not just all going to, you know, this is not an animal community problem. It's everyone's problem. These are our communities that we need to take back. And,
well, another thing we've talked about and is the fact that there's so much fractured ego in the animal community, that, you know, people have their own little turf, and, you know, if their definition of pit bull isn't right, or if there's just so much self-righteous stuff going
yeah.
on, so much ego, that it's almost impossible to unite everybody behind the idea, which I've said
right,
a million times, that it's just wrong to take a dog out of somebody's hands that hasn't done anything because some person who has no training thinks it looks like a pit bull. It's just wrong.
Yeah, agreed.
Why can't
but
we
I,
all agree on that? That's the big
I,
question.
Yeah. But you know, Fred, I mean, the people that are like-minded and that think outside the box and that are willing to jump off the hamster wheel of rescue and go, hey, how about we quit trying to treat the symptoms and try solving the problems? It does take money. It takes a risk. It takes being criticized. It takes doubt. It takes those things. But that's what it takes to create something different. I mean, otherwise it will just continue on and on and on. And, you know, that's what I said. Like I love the Stand Up for Pitt Foundation supporters. They're a bunch of badasses and they're doers and they're like, yeah, we need to, you know, we need to be heard. We need to keep doing, we need to not, you know, keep our head down. As angry as they get, they're like, we'll keep our head down, stick to the mission. And, you know, the main goal is we need to reach people outside of the animal community, our city councilmen, our lawmakers, our law enforcement people need to be educated. They need to understand and be willing to open their hearts and their minds to the truth about this breed. And, you know, I've dealt with it in my own community, the police department in my own, where I live in my own city. You know, I've been to the police station because they've threatened people with pit bulls and had conversations with them. And a lot of the problem is that they're just not educated. And, you know, dog fighting, one thing law enforcement does agree on, as does lawmakers and prosecutors, that where dog fighting is other crime. Yeah. And,
particularly,
you know,
gambling.
What's that?
Particularly gambling, illegal gambling.
Yeah, and also illegal weapons and drugs. And there's also most of the people who are dog fighters are also child abusers. I mean, our communities are not safe. It bleeds. It's all one thing. So, you know, we just feel like if people start understanding that, dog fighting is not just a separate little dark secret that we just ignore and don't talk about. It doesn't affect us. No, it does. Because those same abusers, you know, it's been proven over and over again, those same abusers will go on and most likely do go on to commit crimes against humans.
Well, yeah, we know that many of the serial killers that I'm thinking particularly of Jeffrey Dahmer and the guy who was executed at Stark, I forget his name, Ted Bundy. Both those guys started out with animal cruelty and then, you know, moved forward. And there's clear scientific literature, peer-reviewed studies that show that there is a direct link to animal cruelty and lack of empathy for people. And so this is one of the arguments that is made when people want to, you know, strengthen animal cruelty laws, is the fact that, you know, even if you don't want to do it for the animals and you don't really, you know, you think, well, it's not that important, do it for the people. The people who will go on to be, you know, abused or threatened or whatever by the person who does that. So, in any case, getting back to the tip line, when will this open and how does one get involved in it?
Well, it is a very, 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 very extensive process. This is, it's quite an ordeal. There are a lot of people involved, and you know, one of the next steps we're doing is we're talking to the heads of city and county shelter, our city and county shelter heads, to see if there's a way that we can work with them when the dogs are seized. You know, how long can they have them? What can we offer them to help, you know, to encourage them, to keep them, you know, because they just don't get much time. And and we're still deciding on the number. We're interviewing private investigating companies. We're, you know, it's a very extensive process, but our goal is to have it up and running by March. That's our goal.
That's your inspirational goal.
Yes, that is our inspirational goal. And you know what? I do believe, and Fred, you know, person that believes all things are possible.
That's right.
And I do believe there is a very good chance that it will be up and running by March. That said, it will not be up and running until it is up and running properly. Because
right. It's better to have something. Yeah. It's better to have it run right than get it up too soon.
That's right.
A lot of guys say that too.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, I'm telling you, Fred, you know, these dog fighting is not a joke. It's not something that is, you know, dilly dally. These are people. These are dangerous people doing dangerous things. And So we just want to provide a platform for, you know, for people to call and try to, and the HSUS is going to, if anything leads to an arrest or conviction, the Humane Society will be paying the reward. And, you know, we're very hopeful. I'm sure it's going to be a learning, there'll be a learning curve. There'll be things that we'll constantly have to be working on, watching and changing. But, you know, one of our other goals is to hopefully, you know, create a program and create something that is effective and works so that we could share it with other communities in hopes that maybe they'll get that going right in their community, you know.
Right. It's always good to if success breeds success. Yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah, so this
if something worked, then that's
how. Yeah, and the way that people can get involved, I guess, is like, you know, when it's up and running, you know, it's going to take money to run it. So they want to buy a T-shirt, great. They want to come to a live event, do it, because it will all help. They want to donate, you know, of course, that always helps. So, but it's not up yet. It will be, and it will definitely be known when it is, because it'll be serving LA County and the surrounding areas. So,
so what else do you have? What else do you have planned for 2015? Anything that you can tell us without killing us later?
Well, aside from getting this tip line up and running, which is turning out to be almost as difficult as the organizing
yeah.
in March, you can
yeah.
imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously producing and going to all 7 Stand Up for Pits around the country and continuing to educate and advocate, which we had we were loudmouths about Laura, Dr. Laura, too, and I'm still
yeah.
loudmouth about it. I've written and called and, you know, still she's faced no consequences, but I'm not going to ever stop saying that she should, because I think she's disgusting. But I think what she said was just disgusting.
But you know what I don't understand is, you know, here's what I don't understand. If you're trying to be in the limelight and you're trying to do things and you know you have any idea how many pit bull owners are out there and how popular the pit bull breed has become in the last 5 years, I don't care what you think. Why would you say that? Why? How is that helping you?
I know.
To me, even if you thought that, you wouldn't. You shouldn't say it on the air, because you're going to alienate some of the people who are listening to you and paying. You know, it's too big a base. It's too many people.
It's just like, it's, you know what it is. What really pisses me off, and like, you know, I'm a comedian, and you know, I say things that are not always accepted or considered appropriate. You know, I mean, I do all the time. I do on stage. I do in my real life. I will never be able to properly edit myself. I've already accepted that.
Yeah, but you're not on giving advice about relationships and doing. Yours is in a context. Hers is in.
Well,
in her context,
I mean,
it's inappropriate. Is
listen,
what I say.
Regardless, the bottom line, whether she said that at a dinner party or whether she said it on a radio on a public platform like that, it's like, you're perpetuating the mass murder of a dog you know nothing about. You know nothing about. You literally have stated that you are advocating the mass murder. You've stated that they should all be put down. That's what you're saying. How is a statement like that even considered even remotely appropriate about anything? Like, what an idiot. And, you know, I would love...
Well, particularly the part that she doesn't know anything about the breed. She just doesn't
know any idiot. So basically, you know, the first ask that we made, I think the Stand Up for Pits Foundation was one of the first pages that posted it, and we got lots of people on there going, oh, that was, she said that years ago, and blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? We were like, it doesn't matter when she said it. It aired on December 15th. Whether she taped it 5 years ago or not, it aired on December 15th, where people were hearing it for the first time. I believe, from what we understand, it was taped on the 15th. It's not an old thing. That's not what I've never heard it was. That was never confirmed. But people were like, really? Is that true? Blah, blah. Then I had to get the audio.
Yeah.
Posted the audio. And then people were like, what the hell? And then so immediately, you know, I'm not a big fan of, like, you know, let's just post stuff to get shock value and perpetuate garbage. I always we always try to post things that, you know, have a follow-up ask or a how can you help make something different when you post something. So, you know, posted the audio, posted what she said, and the ask, the very specific ask, was that she be removed from her plat, blatant, like Charlotte Alter, like these other, you know, idiots who get these jobs where it's a job of privilege where they're given a public platform, and they say things like this that are reckless and irresponsible. It's like my ask, our ask was, I want her fired and remove her from that. She can do a podcast from her bathroom. She has a right to exercise her First Amendment. Sit on your bathroom floor and do a podcast, you turd, right? Well, that didn't happen. So then, you know, we also asked people to you know, write to the sponsors and stuff. And apparently, it's not confirmed, but one sponsor has said that they have pulled out. Other people have said that they had, and maybe they have. Maybe that's true. But nothing really has been done, Fred. I mean, so the next ask we did, we waited for like a couple weeks. They kept sending the auto responses to everyone going, oh, your comments are being forward, blah, blah, blah. But no program director is personally responding to anybody, nothing.
Right.
So the next ask that we just did recently was, okay, obviously your sponsors and Sirius doesn't believe that what you said, they actually support that kind of behavior. They support advocating mass murder. Great. They've made that very clear by doing nothing. So now what we're asking is, if you're not going to be removed, or the sponsors aren't going to pull out, or Sirius isn't going to release a statement, or nothing's going to be done about it, then we're asking that you dedicate an entire program to have advocates and educators on to talk about the breed.
Equal time, man.
Yep. And nope, not so far, not one thing. I wrote a very extensive email. I know several other people had. I know several people, I called, I know other people called, many couldn't get through, and not one thing has been done. And, you know, that makes me angrier than the ignorance that she barfed out of her mouth. That makes me angry that there is just literally, someone can say something so horrible and just zero accountability, just none.
Well, you must agree, though, that she did feel the heat, because she did make an apology in line with Michael Vick's apology, which was like, okay, I'm sorry I said this, but I'm keeping my original opinion. So she did get enough heat to make an apology. So I don't think you can say all the stuff that you've done, or that the people who have been involved in it have done, has been totally unsuccessful. I think the fact
that
made an apology is something that I think it's a win. I think it shows that she's concerned enough about that demographic of person that she feels it's necessary for her to do that in order for her to keep, you know, her place and her platform.
First of all, I don't think that – I never said, and I certainly don't think that it was a failure on our part. I think that we were heard, and I was so proud of every single person on every single social media platform and every single person doing everything that they could. I thought it was an incredible thing to see, and I loved how everybody jumped up and was like, no, that is not okay. I loved that, and I was really excited to see the passion behind it. What I'm saying is, and I certainly, yes, she issued an apology, but you mentioned the word cared, and I certainly don't think she gives two shits. I don't think she cares
about the pit bulls. I think she cares about the demographic. I think she's saying, well, I don't want to alienate this big of a group.
I think probably a sponsor or two said, listen, your perm's a little tight, lady. You're going to need to take it down about four notches, or you're gonna lose some money here. And so she probably thought, you know, I'm real sorry. She called us? Pitbull fanciers. Sorry if I offended any pitbull fanciers. All right. Well, you know what? Instead of saying sorry, then just educate the people. Let people have your platform, which you abused, to educate people and make right what you did.
The reason she won't do that is because she doesn't agree with it. I mean, she's just saying it because she's saying it, not because she thinks it. Well, listen, we're going to have to end this segment because we got the next segment coming up here.
How dare you, Fred?
I don't know. It's just I'm the time clock guy, you know. I gotta do it. I can't let everybody, you know, have the whole show. What can I say? I guess we'll have to have a show just you and me.
All right, for the
whole hour and a half.
You name the day. You know I'll do it, Brad.
All right. Well, listen, it's great talking to you. I hope you are enjoying the beauty of the Wallace Award wherever you have it. And we look forward to talking to you again, and hope you have a great 2015.
I will, Fred. And are you gonna watch my show?
I am. I'm going to come up there May 3rd. I'm going to do a lot of traveling this year because I'm single.
No, you're going to go to New York on May 3rd, but you're
yes.
going to watch my show.
Yes.
You're going to watch a new TV show.
Yes. Tell us the show and when it's on.
Oh, well, it's called When Big Happy. It's on NBC, produced by Ellen.
Okay, and when's it coming on?
Oh, premieres. Oh, crap. Oh.
You know everything about pit bulls, but you know nothing about the show you're on television. Okay.
You know what? It is on March 17th. That's St. Patrick's Day. I believe it's St. Patrick's Day. Yep.
All right. Well, we'll get the word out for you.
All right, Fred. Thank you for having me on.
All right.
I love your guts.
All right, man. Thanks. I love your guts back.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Good night. All right. That was Rebecca Corey talking about her plans for 2015. And let's take a little station identification and get on with our sexy Canadian guest, Yvette Van Veen.
Can't get enough of Pit Bulletin Legal News Radio? You can also get news and show updates on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Pit Bulletin Legal News throughout the week. Or visit the Pit Bulletin Legal News Network at www.pblnr.com.
All right, we're back. Chris, what are you up to over there?
I am trying to keep Juno's very loud dream noises from interrupting the interview.
I like when dogs dream. I like when they move their feet and you see their eyes moving. You know they're doing something good.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then if I feel like my dog is having a bad dream, I'll wake him up. But usually it's like, okay, I'm getting this squirrel. I know it. I know he's right there. No. So,
yeah, they're happy noises, but I was, you know, just trying to keep that from interfering.
All right, well, let's bring on our Canadian guest who every week comes in, except for the last 2 weeks when we were off, and always has something wild and crazy and Canadian to talk about.
And the beat goes on. And the beat goes on.
Yvette Van Veen, what's up, girl?
Happy New Year, Fred. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing excellent, thank you. We finally got winter up here.
Well, that's good. We, you know, Florida, Denise was saying that she went to North Carolina and it got down to the 40s.
Oh, my goodness.
And she was freezing.
Oh, jeez. We're at the point where the other night Jordan threw a cup of hot water into the air and it turned to snow. Yeah.
That's cold, bro.
It's cold.
The coldest I've been in is minus 30, and that was in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, we've had that happen. Yeah.
How about Chris, what's the coldest you've been in?
You know, I think probably only minus 5.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah,
you're
I can't remember ever being.
You're not even cold.
Colder.
I mean, that's so lame, man. Laura, what's the coldest you've ever been in?
Probably minus 10, with the wind chill more, but.
Okay, well, that's better yet. But who we really need to talk to is Denise. Denise, what's the coldest you've been in?
Is that 40 degrees?
Okay, well, you're the winner. You're the one who's been you're the hottest chick on here at 40 degrees.
True.
It reminds me of when I was in Arkansas and they got like some snowflakes and everybody's out there trying to find winter coats. It was like, yeah.
Well, in Miami, when it gets to be 50, everybody has their sweaters and their jackets, and it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, let's get down to the wild things that you did New Year's Eve that we've heard all over the internet.
Yeah.
Chris, you heard it too, right?
Oh yeah, it's all over the place. Such scandal.
I heard that you were nude clicking.
Nude clicking?
Yes.
No.
Training clicker.
Yeah. I set it up with Kipper the ex-crotch ripper.
That's what we heard, and we were waiting for the video at 11, and it never came.
No.
But let me tell you, our imaginations were better than the actual video would have been. Right, Chris?
I don't know, man. You bet is really good with that clicker.
Oh, man.
You were worried about how to lead into the good with the clicker thing, right? Now you got like the perfect leading. That's pretty scary.
I totally nailed that.
Because
this brings us to our topic,
yes,
which was
of course it does.
Spawned by a video that Yvette put together about a rate of
she was clothed in this video, though. Let's make that clear.
Yes. Well,
okay.
I think we only saw her hand.
Yeah,
she had a naked hand. That's okay.
So, go ahead, and I'm not exactly sure how to explain this topic, so I'm going to sort of leave that to you, Yvette.
Yeah, so one of the things that I talk about a lot is this idea of I want to work at a certain speed with the dogs when I'm teaching them a new skill. It's called rate of reinforcement, right? So how fast am I working, and is the dog allowed to be distracted between, you know, each time they do a behavior. So sit, and then if they putz around for a bit and come back, you want to avoid that type of stuff. And regardless of what type of method you use, you want to concentrate on your timing, you know, your feedback, whether it's at the right moment. It's a little technical, mechanical skill. So I thought, well, I'm going to just do this little video showing, you know, me and Karma working, how long we work for, and how fast I'm trying to aim for with this, you know, the speed of my reinforcements. So I did the video, and I didn't think much of it. And right at the end, I kind of, you know, after we did our one-minute drill, I reached over and I casually went, good job, Moo, and I petted her on the head. And you see that in the video right at the end. And Karma leans her head into my hand. She likes it when I kind of pat her on the head. And what was interesting was I got some feedback from people saying, oh, you can't touch a dog on the head. And I was like, what? hold on. No.
I have to say I've heard that rumor.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to pat a dog on the head.
Right.
And what I see with my dogs is some dogs love it, and some dogs don't like it.
Right. So, I mean, the idea of if there's a strange dog, somebody else's dog, no, don't pat them on the head. That, absolutely, I agree with. You know, and there's some dogs that are shy or nervous or reactive, and there's reasons why not to pat them on the head, you know. But the flip side of it is you know, when you have if you have a dog, and especially if it's a dog that hasn't had a traumatic experience, you know, they've been handled well from birth and they've been socialized really well, and you've worked on teaching them to enjoy being handled, then, I mean, it's a completely whole other ballgame. It's kind of like you're saying, well, this is the bar to kind of hit. And you have dogs that they're like, yeah, please, like, scratch my head. I love it. Come on, do more.
My dogs will come and actually put their heads under my hand saying, come on.
Yeah. Right. So this idea of, you know, that are we going to, like, I'm used to sort of being criticized the other way where it's like, oh, how come you don't need, you know, don't use corrections? But the flip side, it was kind of interesting to have that other side because sometimes I think positive trainers get accused of being too soft on the dogs and almost to the point of bubble wrapping them where we just don't do stuff with them and our dogs are all little nervous, scared creatures. And I'm definitely not of that mindset. I'm a firm believer, especially if you're getting these dogs from, you know, infancy and they're a stable dog, you need to socialize them and you need to teach them to enjoy being handled and, you know, set the bar high and say, yeah, my dog can go anywhere and if a kid is there, it's not a problem. That's my job to do that. So I just thought it was interesting the sort of contrast between are we going too far and instead of socializing our dogs, are we perhaps going to the point where we're saying, oh, no, we can't touch the dogs.
We're becoming helicopter parents.
Yeah, you know, and we're bubble wrapping our dogs to the point where, you know, is that in the animal's best interest where, you know, everything is bad and it is a crisis for the dog, so we just don't do anything with and to the dog. So I thought it was just kind of an interesting sort of contrast. And I mean, like I said, I certainly wouldn't just rush up and pet somebody's dog on the head because a lot of dogs don't like it.
Yeah.
But the point is that some dogs do like it.
Yeah.
And this idea of, you know, what does a dog like or not like, it's really up to the dog. It's not up to me.
Right.
And I think sometimes we forget that. We try and put things into these boxes and categories where, you know, head pats are bad, you know, chin scratches are good, you know.
What's amazing to me about the whole thing is how worked up everybody gets about it.
I guess that's true of
everything on the internet, but you know, the amount of it's like you can't. It's like no matter what you do, somebody has something to say about it.
Yeah, and this idea of why don't we just kind of look at it? How does this dog take this situation? You know, like a whistle, one dog might find it really, you know, like whatever. Another dog might find it terrifying.
Yeah.
You have to kind of look at each dog and kind of watch their response and decide, does this bug you or does it not bug you? And go from there. I mean, you can generally tell from a dog, you know, if you make a loud noise and they tuck their ears back and duck down and rush off, wow, you don't like that.
Yeah.
It's kind of obvious for the most part when things like that happen.
Yeah, that happens with air horns.
Yeah, and you'll see it even with things like, you know, is a body harness, you know, is it good or is it bad? I've seen dogs that hate body harnesses. I've seen dogs.
My dogs hate getting into a body harness.
Right.
Once I've got them in there, they're fine. But getting them in there takes longer than the actual walk takes.
So you have to sit there and look at the dog and say, how do you take this? And that we make our decisions on what the dog likes and tolerates and dislikes is that dog, not our ideas of where we should kind of fit and put things in terms of categories and look at the dog's responses. So I thought it was kind of interesting in terms of how people categorize things. So I just thought it was just sort of a little interesting thing that happened. And it was.
Do you think that's because of too much anthropomorphism?
I don't think so. I think that we've gotten to the point where we're almost, I'm not sure if it's that we're avoiding the issues ourselves. Like that we're so paranoid of causing distress to the dog that we do nothing.
Right.
Like, well, you know, he might not like that, so I better not pat him on the head. And it's like, well, why don't you just get him liking being patted on the head? To me, it just seems like it's almost like we've gotten into some avoidance behaviors, and I'm not sure I'm liking that because sooner or later, somebody's going to reach over and pat that dog on the head.
Right.
Unless it stays at home all the time. I've seen people say that online. Oh,
yeah.
No, it'll never happen. My dog's too terrified. He just doesn't leave the house. Like, what?
Well, that's management to the end right there.
Yeah.
But I think there was a video going around, and I don't remember the context. Chris probably will remember it, where somebody went to pet a dog on the head and they got bit.
Yep.
And then, you know, the whole moral of the story was never pet a dog on the head.
Right.
Do you remember that, Chris? It was I don't remember, was a kid, or I just remember, you know, you could
I
see
don't,
the
actually.
You could see the dog, like, its tongue, he started licking his tongue, and his eye looked up when the person was bringing their hand down, and then, bam, he got he bit.
Was this a Cesar Millan video?
I don't remember.
I sort of have a vague feeling that maybe I did see it, and maybe it was in relationship to him. But I was wondering if it, because I've definitely seen this where people automatically sort of jump to the worst case scenario regarding a dog's body language and behaviors in like pictures and videos and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering like how much of this you think might be related to people misinterpreting like that a singular moment in time and then going overboard on the erring on the side of caution.
Yeah, sure. Well, I don't think there's a lot of research out there that can even show one way or another that certain body language means, you know, distress or eustress, right? I mean, because stress, you'd have good stress. I mean, you'll see dogs that start getting, you know, frantic and showing stress signs just because there's a cookie, you know, and the heart rate goes up. So, I mean, I think we have to take caution. You know, people start saying, well, we need to get that heart rate down. It's like, well, he's just happy, excited over the cookie. That's heart rate up too. You know, so you have to be putting things into the context of the situation. Otherwise, it's like looking at somebody and saying, oh my goodness, I caught you biting your nails. You must really be stressed out. And it's like, no, I got a hangnail. You know, like you need to kind of look at the entire picture of what's going on before you rather than this snap judgment. And I don't know why it continues, because if you watch these group lists, some of them are dedicated just to reading body language, and you'll see a thread going, and there'll be about 10, 15, 20 different theories on what's going on in the picture, and everybody's convinced they're right. And it's like, but you don't even know the dog. I mean, and all of
I'm
you
actually
can't write.
Part of one of those groups.
Ah.
Where, you know.
I am too.
Point,
yeah, I'm part of a couple of them. I don't comment
I think
on any of
the
them.
Same group. And it like really vastly, vastly different interpretations from one person to the next.
Yep.
And a lot of times it seems that they're sort of isolating a body part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I think maybe that has to do with their specific dog, like maybe that they've experienced with their dog that body part is very telling of their state of mind. And so they transfer that to other dogs where they think, oh, ears tell the whole story, or, you know, the tail tells the whole story, or what have you. When what it sounds like you're saying really is that it's all about the whole body and the context.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And history would be nice too, right? I mean, I could have a dog that you go to pet him on the head and he kind of ducks, and it's like, oh, if that's out of character, I'm not going to be thinking that they have an anxiety issue. I might be thinking, do you have an ear infection?
You might
so
have a hangnail,
possible.
Too.
Sorry?
You might have a hangnail, too.
You might have a hangnail. I've had that happen, actually, to a dog. They ripped their toenail and it got infected. Yeah, but you never, right? And the next thing you know, they've got their paw up. They're favoring it. And, oh, there's another calming signal. You know, they're lifting their paw.
Yes.
So oddly, that could actually be possible. And I think it's that context where, you know, it's all good and well to sit there and spend your time trying to read body paws. But can anyone do it accurately?
You know, the other thing that I've noticed is that a lot of the dog's signals in real time are very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch them in slow motion, you go, oh, I see that and I see that. But in real time, you wouldn't see it.
Yeah, and I think sometimes
it just changes.
Yeah, there is. And people will say, oh, well, if you watch closely enough, you'll pick up on it. And I'm not convinced that always happens. Like if you have a dog that's a resource guarder, they could be lying there chewing a bone. You take one
Absolutely.
Step in the wrong direction, and bam, they
bam.
Flip. And you don't get those. You don't get the warning signs that quickly. Like you don't have the time to react, and
fast.
Especially the ones with severe problems, because they'll charge at you. And at that point, you're kind of buggered, right? So
then you say, "Look, here's the place where you put your charge card. We got plenty of time."
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting thing, because on one hand, I think, yeah, you should listen to the dog and watch their body language. I just think perhaps we've gone a little extreme with it, where it's almost to the point. Yeah.
All right. Well,
do you find that people in real life do this as well, or is it more isolated in online?
Oh, I think once people in real life learn about it, they get paranoid. I've had clients, they've learned about it, and they're like, oh, I was watching him. He licked, like, you know, 7 times tonight, and then he yawned 3 times, and I'm not sure what's bothering him, and I'm really worried about him, and they get very upset about it. And it's like, well, you know, like, I know your dog, and, you know, every dog at some point will, you know, they might stress you on over something, but it doesn't mean they're having a nervous breakdown.
Let me interrupt here. Chris, do you want to do your segment after this, or do you want to wait till next week, or what do you want to do?
Why don't we wait till next week, because we have like a minute left.
Yes. What I would do is we would just go over, but if you want to do it, we can do it next week.
No, I can do it next week.
Okay. All right. Well, Yvette, as usual, your clicking training has been a very amazing draw for tonight's show. People wanted to find out exactly what that video is going to be like, and now they know.
There they go. Yeah,
I want to say it is a great video and really shows you like the ideal of, you know, the rate of reinforcement. So, you know, people
and her
tell
and
people
don't forget her naked hand. Her naked hand is on there.
You see my Christmas nails. Jordan picked the colors up. Yeah,
that's great. So listen,
really, before we run out of time, where's the video posted?
Sorry.
Where is the video posted? Where can people see the video?
Oh, you know what? I will post it to my Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. I'll bump it up and make sure it's at the top of the page tonight. How's that sound?
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well, that's it for tonight. Everybody have a good week. We'll see you next week, same time. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.